You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Right, so we are at this day in history, and we are going to South Vietnam in 1964.
Indeed, Justin, for the Gulf of Tonkin incident. This was sort of the inciting incident, which was later found to have been sort of not faked, but sort of actually more provoked by America than they claimed to, which then served as the pretext for their direct involvement in the Vietnam War. So this conflict had been going really since the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. You'd had the old French Empire fighting against the Viet Minh, which is the sort of local nationalist, sort of left-wing nationalist, whatever you want to call
communists.
Them. Yeah, they weren't. Yeah. They didn't declare themselves as communists quite then. It was like a more of a left-wing nationalist, but they did have a sizable communist cadre element, which obviously meant the Americans were very hostile to them and would support the French up until their famous defeat at the Battle of Dien Bien Phu.
As the fateful Geneva Conference approaches, Reds throw everything they have at supply lines leading to Dien Bien Phu, which has become symbolic of the outcome of the war in Indochina. The Haiphong-Hanoi Road is mine. Hanoi and the seaport town of Haiphong form a vital air-sea link to the beleaguered garrison, which has now withstood more than a month of siege. Wounded men and damaged equipment are the daily toll, as the Reds hammer incessantly at the artery which is keeping Dien Bien Phu in the fight. Not only is the road under attack, but the paralleling rail line is mined nightly in a desperate but vain effort to knock out the supply route which may spell victory or defeat for the gallant French defenders, and which may have an important psychological effect on the conclusions reached at the forthcoming parley at Geneva. Herculean efforts keep the railroad in commission as labor battalions toil round the clock to keep rolling stock moving. With the fate of Southeast Asia in the balance, the battle of supply must be won.
Well, the battle of supply would be lost by the French, who would have to pull out of Indochina. In the aftermath of the Geneva Accords, Vietnam would be divided into North and South, the North mm-hmm. being the sort of Viet Minh, more communist side.
Led by Ho Chi Minh himself.
Indeed. And the South being more pro-American. Mm-hmm. They would become increasingly sort of notorious for their corruption and brutality. Mm-hmm. However, despite all of this, they would still be strongly supported by the United States.
Meanwhile, in Saigon, capital of Laos's neighbor, South Vietnam, Vice President Lyndon Johnson pursues his fact-finding tour for President Kennedy. He announces an eight-point program for U.S. aid to this strategic and highly vulnerable nation, a program that includes arms and money to meet communist guerrilla threats and improve social conditions. Manila continues the warm reception of the Vice President. And he continues his informal Texas style, mingling with the welcoming crowds. Through such grassroots contacts, as well as through searching talks with the heads of governments in southeastern Asia, Mr. Johnson, now watching Filipino maneuvers, seeks information that may be a factor in Washington's decision for or against a meeting of President Kennedy with Nikita Khrushchev.
And so after the death of President Kennedy, America's involvement in Vietnam, South Vietnam, would continue to escalate. Mm-hmm. Up until this point, technically, they weren't fighting. They had military advisors in country, which was probably a lie. They probably were to a degree doing fighting, but just not to the extent that they later would after these military advisors were replaced.
It's been a long time since such jolly pictures have come from South Vietnam, but these men have reason to grin. They're boarding Air Force jets to fly back to the States to home and Christmas. The Defense Department doesn't call this Operation Santa Claus or Reindeer or anything whimsical. They call it Operation Cutback, for it means more than just Christmas leave. It means the beginning of permanent reduction of American servicemen in this still strife-torn country. 220 happy soldiers, sailors, and flyers are in the first homebound flights. By Christmas, 1,000 will have shipped out, which is the maximum cutback planned at present. And speaking of presents, there's none better than home for Christmas.
Yes, and that was newsreel footage about the return of American military advisors from South Vietnam. And like I said, technically, they didn't have any direct engagement in the war. However, this would all change with the Gulf after the Gulf of Tonkin incident on this day in history, 1964.
Swift and sure has been U.S. retaliation for communist PT boat attacks on the high seas. This is the Maddox, one of the two destroyers that were attacked while patrolling international waters in the Gulf of Tonkin near North Vietnam. Warplanes from two carriers, the Ticonderoga and the Constellation, avenged the unwarranted Red Assault with 64 sorties to North Vietnam PT bases. 25 boats, more than half the fleet, were destroyed, and North Vietnam oil reserves badly depleted. It is estimated 10% went up in flames after direct hits. The Pentagon said two pilots were lost. One was reported to be a prisoner of the Reds. The U.S. sorties were launched for one purpose, as a warning to the communists that unprovoked attacks will bring prompt response. The lights burned all night in the White House as President Johnson conferred with his advisors, and he went before the nation to report on the crisis.
In the larger sense, this new act of aggression aimed directly at our own forces again brings home to all of us in the United States the importance of the struggle for peace and security in Southeast Asia. Aggression by terror against the peaceful villagers of South Vietnam has now been joined by open aggression on the high seas against the United States of America.
Before this new Southeast Asia crisis, the United States had announced that 5,000 more military advisors were being sent to South Vietnam to bring our forces there to 21,000. Now this number will be increased even further. At sea, on land, and in the air, the awesome United States military machine is mounting a force that can face up to any threat. In the field, the communist Viet Cong rebels appear to be stronger in recent weeks. They have made hit-and-run raids within 4 miles of Saigon, center of U.S. and South Vietnam operations. There are reports of an enemy troop buildup on the South Vietnam northern border. Now it appears that for the first time, there is talk of a South Vietnam drive into North Vietnam. Reinforcements are being moved into strategic locations as part of a new strategy in this frustrating war. This is not to force a showdown with the Reds, but to emphasize the U.S. wish to contain the war. Interceptor and fighter-bomber aircraft are being flown into South Vietnam and Thailand rapidly, as other air squadrons are transferred from the United States to advance bases in the Pacific. As always, political differences faded in the United States, and leaders of both parties united behind the president to grant him all powers necessary to carry out our commitments to defend world peace.
It is a solemn responsibility to have to order even limited military action by forces whose overall strength is as vast and as awesome as those of the United States of America. But it is my considered conviction, shared throughout your government, that firmness in the right is indispensable today for peace. That firmness will always be measured. Its mission is peace.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.